talk and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clements, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance held a rally in Eau Claire Tuesday. Republican Congressman Derek Van Orden spoke as well. It was Vance's second stop in Eau Claire in 6 weeks. Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris is set to campaign Friday night in Madison. People in southwest Wisconsin are just learning about a cyber attack that happened 11 months ago. Terry Bell reports.
People in and around Richland Center were notified over the weekend about a cybersecurity incident from almost a year ago. Richland County officials confirmed their server was hacked on or about October 4th of last year. Toll-free number has been set up to help people with questions. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Download the free Civic Media app today at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about, more of our time at the DNC as we are at the Midwest Labor Press Association's Education Conference. We sat down with, I think, like 60 people. We did, you know, interviews. We were like the machine. Everybody who would come by, we sat down and talked to, because that's how I run this operation. I want to hear different voices. I want people to come share their thoughts. So today we're going to grab a couple of the conversations we had with members of the House of Representatives: Wisconsin Representative Mark Pocan, Texas Representative Greg Cesar, California Representatives Ro Khanna and Zoe Lofgren are going to be on the program today. And look, you know, with Pocan, the idea is, you know, labor front and center. The Democratic Party finding its roots. Greg Cesar, a labor organizer, a guy who, you know, spent part of his life going, "Hey, how do we make lives better?" Oh yeah, that you thing. And Ro Khanna, who is all in on bringing steel production back to the U.S. and making sure that those manufacturing jobs are our family sustaining wage jobs, our union jobs. And Zoe Lofgren, again, you know, part of the Appropriations Committee. The minority chair, what we should and can be doing through the levers of government to make lives better. And what I loved about my time speaking with a number of these representatives is in the past, you'd get them to, I would bring up the topic of, you know, what's your position on unions? And they would, you know, they'd give you a stock answer. This time around, it was a lot more personal. People had found picket lines. So, you know, during that hot labor summer, while I was going, hey, folks, go adopt a striker. These people were listening. And they got out there and they talked to people. And I know it's hard to believe, but I got the sense of, you know, the connection and the want and really the hope. You know, I know joy and hope and all that stuff get thrown around, but these folks are saying, you know, if we can get majorities where we need them, if we can get people elected and we can move a really pro-working family agenda, we can do a new kind of new deal, a kind of fair deal, the kind of ideals of the past that, you know, when people look toward government to make lives better, they responded. And I think people in this moment are looking for something. Been saying this for a while. Looking for some way to correct the wrongs, because everyone knows something isn't right. Everyone knows that this isn't the America that they dreamed was going to be their future. You know, especially my generation, we were raised in the, you know, hey, you go to work, you work hard, you play by the rules, and you're going to do okay. You're going to be able to buy a house. You're going to be able to raise your kids. You're going to have a good life. You're going to retire with dignity. It's going to be that American dream that my grandparents' generation handed down to their kids and so on. I don't know that I can say that to my children. So, and I think across the board, on regardless of what color hat or shirt you're wearing, we want that for our children. We want better opportunities. We want dignity, respect. At least I believe that. Some on the right are testing my belief in that, quite frankly. But today, I'm going to share some thoughts on how we can use the House, how we can use our political system to make some lives better, to do good things, to do the right things. And, you know, I remember, you know, talking with, and you're going to hear this in a minute, but, you know, Ro Khanna talking about the idea of bringing steel manufacturing back to the U.S. Under his bill that will reshore some manufacturing, which desperately needed. Again, things we've been talking about on this show for nearly two decades. All of the things that I've wanted to see happen, we seem to be moving in that direction. And that's a great thing. That gives me hope. That gives me great joy that there could be, maybe, possibly, if we make the right choice in November, to get to a place where, you know, if you work hard and you play by the rules, you get ahead. Quick break. When we come back, my interview with Mark Pocan.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about, labor is everywhere. Around the ring in the vestibule here, the shirts walking by, the labor leaders that we've been talking to. But one of my favorite labor guys, Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan, who's come to sit down with us. So thrilled to see you. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Glad to be here.
Last time we met in person, back in 2011, it was a little colder then.
Yeah.
a lot more people than there are here, but a memorable moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was the uprising when Scott Walker decided to try to destroy public employee unions, didn't give a damn about, you know, the policies, the rules of the state government. He was running for president someday. And the good news is there has been a court case filed, and we have a friendly Supreme Court that is fair and just to try to get rid of that. So I was at talking to Ask Me today, and you know, President Saunders was there, and he mentioned this case, and we think there's a very good chance after all these years, the damage by Scott Walker can be over hopefully very soon.
Yeah, but the damage can't be undone.
No.
Of all those lives that have been made worse, all those jobs that were made worse, all the children who lost opportunity. I mean, the damage, you know, irreparable, but going forward to right the ship, I think, extremely important.
But you know what? That movement made so many activists and so many people aware of labor issues that I don't think existed previously. I'm a silver lining guy. There was a silver lining to it. I mean, right now, the person that we've hired to be our executive director of the Labor Caucus in Congress, a guy named Tommy Wolf, his parents were teachers in Superior, Wisconsin during the uprising. He was from Duluth, and he went to UW-Madison, and now he's the executive director of the Labor Caucus. So, you know, there's a lot of tentacles that have gone from there. So Scott Walker helped Democratic politics immensely. Scott, as much as you're a douchebag, thank you for being a douchebag.
No, that's a great look, you're a half full guy.
Yes, there you go.
So no, that's a great way of looking at it. Yeah. You're building activists out of destruction, and that's the right way. Because I look here, this has been what they're saying in the most pro-labor convention. Mm-hmm. I've said now the Democratic Party, to me, and I don't say this lightly, is now the Labor Party. They've found their roots. That's a great thing. And hopefully now we're moving forward to make lives better.
Yeah, and you know, one other thing I just have to mention from that movement and that organizing. In Madison, when we have a fall election now, do you know what the turnout in the city of Madison is? And again, this is all because of that organizing back, thanks to Scott Walker in 2011. 93% voter turnout. So, again,
how
Scott Walker,
thank you. How do you bottle that?
You just got to take a douchebag like Scott Walker and dangle, you know, presidential aspirations in front of him. Then, fortunately, it kind of works. But it's amazing, right? I mean, and it's part of why in Wisconsin, you know, we have red areas, we have blue areas. Because of that, we're a purple state. But this year, with Tammy Baldwin up for the U.S. Senate, with a chance to beat Derek Van Orden in Wisconsin 3 and Brian Stile in Wisconsin 1, to pick up the state legislature, we have fair maps for the first time, thanks to that fair Supreme Court that we have. Right. This is a very exciting November for people who live in Wisconsin.
There's some opportunities here and some opportunities to do what your state motto is.
Yeah, forward, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I'll tell you, having Tim Walz on the ticket is very helpful because other than sports teams, you know, that Minnesota has, you know, we're moving. Is that something I can't say? Sorry about that.
No, just wrote it down so I can bleep it.
Okay, sorry about that. You know, he sounds like he's from Wisconsin or Michigan or Minnesota, right? Yeah. I mean, upper Midwest, we sound in a certain way. And I think that is going to be very helpful, along with, obviously, Kamala Harris doing very well in Wisconsin right now. But Tim Walz helps us get across the finish line.
No, look, he plays in my area. I live in central Pennsylvania. Yeah. He plays with a lot of the working class conservative, because he's radically normal.
Yes, I know. But that's what I love. When he went viral at the beginning of this whole movement looking for a VP and said they're weird, you know, that's how we talk, right? They are weird. I mean, J.D. Vance is like the dictionary. You open it up, and his picture is there, and Donald Trump is here.
Just keep him off the couch.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God. And I loved that Tim Walz used that line, right? I mean,
No, but what him doing that means to me, and I've said this a bunch of times, I've always said the Democrats are the party that in a street fight going to hold your coat.
Yeah, yeah.
Tim Walz tells me, no, we're not holding. We may hold it long enough to put it over your head,
right,
and then beat you. But and that low high thing, he's the guy who's going to put your face in the dirt.
Yeah, and Michelle Obama, I'm glad she's found her new from saying when they go low, we go high. Last night, she kind of slapped him in the face a few times. I think, you know, this is the time we need to be honest and authentic and blunt with voters, that we know they agree with us on the issues, especially issues that affect working people and unions and middle class. And let's just fully embrace that. Let's run with that for the next 76 days going to the November election. I feel like we are in a good place.
No, I feel we're in a good place because, as I've been saying, a lot of the fringe issues that get a lot of the attention, that's not going to unite us. But the fact that labor is front and center here, I've said for years, if we want to reunite this country, re-energize, you got to reinvigorate the labor movement.
Yeah.
We got to reunionize this country because everybody wants better wages, hours, conditions.
Yeah.
Everyone wants health and retirement security. Everyone universally. And the party that can do that will be the party that does well. All of that other stuff we can work out. I don't care about all those other fringe issues. I want to care about putting food on the table first. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think the Democrats have made that turn.
No, I completely agree. What people talk about at their kitchen table is, do they have money for rent or a mortgage? Do they have health insurance for their family? Can they take a family vacation in Wisconsin? Can you get a camper, a snowmobile, a boat, some kind of, you know, luxury?
Some toy.
Yeah, and that's what you want someone to talk to you about. And I think that right now you're seeing that out of Harrison Wells. And you're not seeing that out of Donald Trump. He's still trying to, you know, gloom and doom, and he's a cartoon, right? This guy is not talking about what real people talk about. So I think if we keep pressing these issues, and then, you know, don't forget Project 2025, Trump's Project 2025. He's trying to run away from it. But 140 of his former administration folks and lackeys wrote parts of that. The Heritage Foundation is not a sponsor of the DNC. They were a sponsor of the RNC. They're the lead advocates. They're saying get rid of prevailing wage, allow states to ban unions. They want to get rid of public employee unions. They want to allow you to get rid of a union mid-contract. They want to get rid of child labor laws, things that protect kids who work in meatpacking and mining facilities, and on and on and on. This thing is a wet dream for every billionaire and corporate overlord, and for labor, it's the worst nightmare.
You've been listening.
Yes, we have a special task force that Hakeem Jeffries put together in the Democratic caucus, and I'm part of that on Project 2025. So we're actually doing a town hall next Wednesday in Madison on this. And then if it goes well, I think we're going to take it around the state, because I want everyone to know, no matter who you are, like Medicare, they don't want you. You've paid all your life into Social Security and Medicare. They want to force you to go to a private system like Medicare Advantage, which often doesn't work, because I get the calls from my constituents who have problems. They want to privatize all of this stuff, and it's our money that they're trying to steal. It's the biggest big brother grab of government, firing 50,000 government workers and putting them in political appointees in place. This is all in Project 2025, much less the surveillance of women when it comes to choice, go on and on.
But they're open and honest about it.
Yeah. So we got to do it. Yeah.
They wrote it down, 900 pages, that you can keyword search on your particular issue.
Yes.
To find out how they want to take us back to the Gilded Age.
Yeah. Well, and then some. I mean, the Gilded Age is like, wow, we didn't think of that, right? So let's fully expose them for what they put together. There's a reason he's running from it, and we're just going to keep chasing him.
So as you look at this, and you know, obviously a lot of excitement here, you've been to a lot of these.
Mm-hmm.
Rank it. How does this rank against Obama's 2008 convention? Any thoughts?
This is my fifth. The energy level is one of the highest, if not the highest, right now. I mean, you know, I used to go to see where the protesters were. We walked by today.
There's nothing.
The only protesters apparently are on Fox News because they keep showing, you know, a few people. And like, this is what's happening. No, I mean, people are very unified. We understand the threat to democracy, to everything we care about, that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance bring. And people are just unified. And it's not prior to the ticket change. As much as I have total respect for Joe Biden and all that he did in those first 2 years, especially.
I have even more admiration for the man.
Who in Washington puts their personal ambition aside for the country? I mean, he's like a fire-breathing, flying unicorn. You know, like they don't exist. But this is significant right now. We're in a moment where people were afraid Donald Trump could win, and now they're excited about Kamala Harris winning. So it's not just, we're afraid of terrible things, we're excited about good things. And it's always better to have that. And anyone who says joy is part of their campaign, damn it. Sorry, hopefully that's not a swear word. That's good. I like joy. Joy and fun are good words.
I
we
like
should
being
embrace
happy.
Them.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Because look, I want to move forward. Yeah. I want a country worth leaving my children.
Yeah.
I want better opportunities. I want to wake up and not go, oh, what burning hellscape am I going to be shoved into today? Look, I've been in Chicago here for a couple of days. We've been all over the place.
Yeah.
Can't find the burning hellscape.
No, I'll tell you, if at the end of the day, Elon Musk and Amazon are not happy, we did something good.
Amen, brother. Mark, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Yeah.
You got to come back more often.
Yeah, anytime. I mean, You know, I do what I'm told, unfortunately, on my schedule. I don't control the calendar, but I am absolutely love to. This is my passion.
Good
so.
Stuff, Mark. Thank you. Thanks so much. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break back here at the UC here in Chicago. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Great thing about conventions, you get to talk to politicians from all over the country. And we've had a great time doing that. Rokana stopped by a little bit earlier. We've had, you know, people from all around the country sharing the important, incredible work that they're doing on the labor front. Now, as I've been saying, for me, this has been the most pro-labor convention that of my lifetime. The Democratic Party has been taken over by labor, and it's the Labor Party. For those who are saying we should be starting that, I think it's here. That's why I'm thrilled to sit down with Texas Representative Greg Cesar. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
I'm so excited to be here. It has been a labor convention.
So you're a guy who's got a labor past before you were a member of Congress. You were out there beating the paths, organizing workers.
I was organizing construction workers throughout the state of Texas, union and non-union, for better wages and some baseline things like heat protections that I get to work on now as a member of Congress.
Let's talk about the heat protections, because Texas got themselves in the news as your governor repealed heat protections for workers that don't have the benefit of a union contract. That seems cruel to me, seems unusually cruel, but not surprising coming from Republicans. Tell me about what's going on in your state.
So as a labor organizer, I work to pass these laws, which just guarantee workers a break from the sun and some water every few hours worth of work. But then the big corporate lobby in Texas said, we don't want workers getting the idea that if they start asking for heat breaks now, maybe it's a living wage next. And so they pushed this thing called the Death Star Bill that wiped out workers' rights and tenants' rights at the local level statewide. So instead of giving up on it, we went to the Biden administration and said, let's have OSHA put in place a national rule protecting tens of millions of workers in the heat, because even some union contracts don't cover this. And he listened. We actually had union activists in a thirst strike standing on the steps of the U.S. Capitol, not drinking water all day in the Washington, D.C. sun. He responded with a very strong rule, and now we've got to get it into effect. And I think we will, if we're able to win this election.
No, that's important. But, you know, to me, I can't think of anything more cruel than that. And some of the responses that I've heard from Republican politicians were like, well, just go get a drink. You know, if you're feeling just, it's your responsibility to take care of yourself, just go ahead. Without understanding that if you just go ahead, you don't come back tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, they don't understand that folks are up on a scaffold in the Texas heat and they may not get let down. They're actually just this week was a UPS driver that died in North Texas. He called in to his supervisor, according to these media reports, asking to be able to just take a break. And he was told, keep on delivering the packages. Next thing you know, he's in an accident and dies after suffering from heat illness. And so these basic rights are still under attack. And we know that the vast majority of voters, 90% of Democrats and Republicans are united across the aisle as voters for things like heat protections. It's just the Republican goons in office that are against it. Well, you know, they respond more to their corporate lobbyists and donors than their voters. And I'm proud, as you said earlier, that the Democratic Party is now getting away from that corporate bent and is increasingly realizing that we can have good policy and good politics by being the working people's party again.
No. Look, I heard somebody tell me, you know, that 20% of the delegates are union members. That's how you take over a political party. You get involved. You take it over from the inside, and you push. And we saw that on Monday night as that was a pretty electric moment for labor.
It was amazing to have folks from so many of the international labor unions all on stage speaking at the DNC. And I'm proud that those now seem like just the mainstream ideas. It used to be that talking about corporate price gouging and monopolies was more of a seen as just a progressive issue. Now it's the core center of the party's message, and I think that's a great thing. And I'm happy and would like for us to keep on bringing more things into the core of the message.
What should we be bringing? What more do we need?
I think we need some fundamental labor law reform to be at the very top of the Democratic Party agenda. Yes, restore the right to abortion. Yes, restore the Voting Rights Act with the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. And then finally, restore what workers fought and died for in the 20s and 30s, which is the right to join a union rather than a fight, and the right to a first union contract. Because there are so many people across the country organizing right now on their own. But we don't want them being stuck without ever getting a contract. And so I think some baseline labor law reform would be really important.
No, I think a perfect example of that is in New York with the Amazon workers, the JFK 8, where they won a historic election. I don't think they're ever going to see a contract unless you have, you know, the Teamsters have aligned with ALU and there's some push there. But I fear because our laws are so badly broken, it never happens.
You've got to have workers organizing outside of government with their employers and also organizing inside of government, because we know government can be either the best support for workers organizing or, as we saw in the bad old days and the worst old days, the worst union busting. And so really, we've got to be able to be paying attention to politics if you care about workers.
And that's why I look here and thrilled to see so much labor rhetoric going on. But again, it comes down to policy. I look at Joe Biden. Again, we've talked about this numerous times. The most pro-labor president ever, has done a lot, but we're not where we need to go. Do you see the Harris Walls team as that conduit to keep moving this message? And what do we need in Congress and the Senate to get done?
Look, President Biden has always understood working people throughout his career, but it was also the labor movement and their organizing that fully got him there. And I think we need to do the same thing with Harris Walls. Make sure that they know that it's union members and union volunteers and working people that got them there, and then have them come and make sure we have the reform so that we can keep on doing that kind of work.
That is so the organizer mentality.
That's got to be the mentality. And I think that the continued organizing of people's workplaces is the way we build long-term power inside and outside of the party.
And I argue it's how we reunite the country. Because then we all have a common interest. And that common interest is decent wages, health security, retirement security, opportunity, all of those things. That's what brings us together. I argue the labor movement was the secret sauce of my grandparents' generation.
And that's how we refocus the conversation. Right now, Republicans are so focused on blaming a desperate person at the border or pointing and bullying an LGBTQ kid. And it's because they're trying to distract from the real issue, which is billionaires pocketing most of the profits in this country. That's why I'm really looking forward to the fight next year on the Trump tax scam, because a lot of those tax breaks for the wealthiest are coming up for expiration. And I think a reinvigorated labor movement can say, no, we aren't just sending more and more of these profits to the richest folks. We want to cut in workers on the deal.
Absolutely. So on Monday night, you had to be thrilled to see Sean Fain up there.
Oh, he did such a great job.
I heard
Google searches for the word scab skyrocketed.
And that's an important thing, isn't it?
It is. You know, I think that the UAW's strikes, along with the Starbucks worker organizing, weren't just about the big three automakers and Starbucks. They taught the nation a lesson about what organizing is and what the labor movement is in a bigger sort of way. And I think that that we need to do more of that. We need to bring more of these fights into the public sphere, because then more and more young people who are ready to organize and make a change, they're watching this stuff on their phones and they're learning to do it themselves.
No. You've moved the labor movement into a younger generation. I say all the time, every generation has to rediscover what solidarity is, what community is. And unions are the heart of all of that. So you're seeing a younger generation with the Starbucks workers, with the Amazon workers, saying, hey, we don't want to work our entire lives for poverty wages. We don't want to live in mom and dad's basement. We want what grandma and grandpa have.
And I think it's important, of course, as labor leaders, folks have to be able to negotiate their contracts, do some of the important work that sometimes happens in private. But for some of this to be public-facing and be told to the public really benefits the labor movement in the long term. For Sean Fain to come out here and just lay out exactly what a worker-centric vision of the Democratic Party is, you don't usually hear that at one of these conventions.
No, and look, as many labor leaders who are on the stage, I'll tell you, that shows exactly where this party is. So from now till Election Day, what's the marching order?
Right now, we need folks knocking on doors, pushing an economic message on the doors and a labor organizing message on the doors, and for us to let the campaign know that that's the message that we're pushing. Because if we can show it's a winning formula for the campaign, then it should be a winning formula for what it is we do when we govern. Because I'm not just interested in winning elections to feel important. I'm interested in us winning elections so that we deliver the increased wages, the increased union rights that folks deserve.
Yeah, I want actions. You know, look, we went through that during the Obama years. Don't know what your thoughts of President Obama were, but from a labor perspective, didn't deliver.
We want to be able to deliver on the goods.
There you go. Greg, I appreciate you taking time for us. We'd love to have you come back and talk with us again.
I look forward to it.
Good stuff. Texas Congressman Greg Cesar. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
News, talk, community, and local sports. Thanks for listening to Civic Media.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media is your spot for sports. From updates on your favorite teams, live broadcasts of the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, and Bucks, and local sports coverage in your community, we've got everything you need. Find a station near you at civicmedia.us or download the free app today. We'll have more news and talk coming up here on Civic Media's stream.
Matt Nair on air.
Wisconsin Public Radio Dodge County Clerk's backtrack on using drop boxes after concerns from Republican sheriff in order to prevent the perception of voter fraud.
What is he citing as any sort of proof of concern about this?
Gut feeling. Oh, it's a gut feeling.
Yeah,
inherently.
Feel it in your bones.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been filling time talking with people, the hall, as you can tell, just packed with folks. And one of the people we grabbed as he was running by, Congressman Ro Khanna, been on the show a couple of times, you may remember, but has a great piece of legislation, the Steel Modernization Act. Certainly going to ask him about that. But, Ro, thanks for stopping by.
Rick, I always enjoy coming on. You've got a great show, and I appreciate your having me.
So what do you think of this little shindig?
Well, it's been electric. I mean, the energy is incredible. I've never seen the party as unified as we are. We are going to go out and win, and people are doing the work. I mean, the fact that the vice president today isn't out celebrating but is with Tim Walz in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, earning votes, that's the attitude that's going to win this for us.
Yeah, you got to get out there and you got to do the kissing babies and shaking hands, don't you?
You got to talk to people. You got to respect people. You got to ask them for their vote. You got to work. Americans, the one thing Americans love is hard work. They respect work.
And you got to have a vision for what the future is, and that's why the Steel Modernization Act, I think, is so incredibly important. In fact, recently you were in my state of Pennsylvania out there near Johnstown, if I remember right, talking about how we're going to build steel in the U.S., because as we're rebuilding our roads and bridges and all of that infrastructure, steel is a central component of it.
Well, Rick, I was in my state, too, because I was born in Philadelphia, grew up in Bucks County, and still am a Phillies fan, but I was in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And you know what they told me, which I didn't know, that Western Pennsylvania produced more steel than Japan and Germany at the height of World War II, and used to produce 65% of the world's steel at the time of World War II. You know what we produce now? 4%. It was a crime,
yep,
what we allowed in this country, the hollowing out and deindustrialization of places like Farrell and Johnstown and Downriver, Michigan, and Gary, Indiana, and Ashtabula County. My bill says, let's bring modern steel back. Let's do it with hydrogen or direct reduction iron like you have in Toledo, Ohio. You can have these plants. They're going to be one-third of the carbon footprint. They're going to employ 1,000 people. They've got the highest quality steel that's better than the stuff coming from China. And let's reindustrialize these towns and give people hope again,
yep,
for an economic future.
No, we spent a, a month on the road back in 2022, going to places that used to be. Toledo was one of those places. They were the glass capital of the world.
Yeah.
And now they've got a glass museum that was made with all Chinese glass. Because we don't make that kind of glass anymore. And I'm a huge fan of domestic production from domestic consumption. If we need it, we should be able to make it. And we should be able to do it green and in a way that creates jobs and opportunities.
That should be our entire focus. It can bring this country together to become a manufacturing superpower again. And we have an opportunity because we've got new technology, AI, advanced technology that allows us to be more productive than anywhere else in the world. And we've got new technology that allows us to decarbonize, which the world is going to have to do. And we actually should say, look, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, you're talking about building new factories, but all you're proposing is corporate tax cuts.
Right.
How are they going to put a factory in Johnstown or in Youngstown? You want to do a factory in those places? Then give federal financing to build a plant, to scale factories. That's how Hamilton did it. That's how Lincoln did it. That's how FDR did it. That's how the modern Democratic Party is going to do it. We're going to reindustrialize every part of this country that was left out, and it's not all going to be steel. And upstate New Hampshire, maybe timber manufacturing, lamentation to have timber that takes the place of concrete. In other places, it may be new semiconductor plants. But every community, we're going to ask, what can we build and what can we have for self-reliance in this country?
No, look, I tell my kids all the time, the toys I played with when I was a kid, they were made here. The bikes that I rode, they were made here. The stuff that we consumed when I was a kid, all made in the U.S. Occasionally a little bit of Taiwan, but everything now made in China.
Well, and that's the point. Look, no one is saying that we have to go to mercantilism or autarky where we have to make every single thing, but we don't have to run $800 billion trade deficits. One person, an IBEW guy, explained it to me pretty simply. He said, look, I have got no problem buying paper from China if they'll buy our pencils, but goddammit, I'm not going to buy both the pencils and the paper. That's what's going on.
Right.
That's what's going on. We got to have our stuff that we're making and selling so that it's fair, so that it's balanced. But what we've done, what our politicians did, is they wanted the top people to make a ton of money. They said this manufacturing stuff is a cost. Let's offshore it. Let's allow it to go into the dirtiest places, lowest wage places. The people who made out were Wall Street, were the dividends, were the stocks. And the people who got shafted were people in places like Johnstown. And you know what? If I was there, I'd be angry too.
You should be.
And it was and this is what led to Donald Trump. There were a lot of people who said, I didn't get a fair deal. Now, what we got to say is we respect that. We understand that. But we got to have real vision and solutions of how we actually reindustrialize this country. And just putting tariffs on China, though necessary, isn't going to give companies the incentive to put the plants back in Johnstown. We have a plan to actually do that.
But I just heard Donald Trump say that, what is it, that a tariff is a tax on a foreign country. They were taxing foreign, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Something about foreign country, something or other.
Well, look, he's got to be honest with people, which is obviously if you put a tariff on something, you're going to have higher price that people are going to pay here. But the point is, his problem is he wants to put a tariff on everything. I'm saying let's put the tariff on China, which is dumping into the United States. You don't have to put a tariff on Canada and Japan and allies. Let's focus on stopping the dumping. Then let's finance some of the new industry here in the United States that we're financing and the labor force, have good union jobs, and build those new factories here in America for steel, for aluminum, for shipbuilding, for new drugs. I said to the president, imagine if you could be the president who brought back steel. I mean, you talk about a landslide win in Pennsylvania. Yep. I think he would have won that state overwhelmingly.
No, look, if you're the guy who's bringing back or the woman who's going to be bringing back opportunity and hope, because ultimately what you're talking about are jobs and hope and opportunity for families. You know, I think about those families that I grew up around. You know, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. When that neighbor got that job at Ford, that union job, their life got better immediately. They had food at the end of the month. Their kids got better clothes. They eventually got a secondhand car. They eventually moved out. Their lives got measurably better, and it's the job that is no longer there, and those families are back where they started from.
You're absolutely right. It's not just about the plan or even the job. It's about hope. It's about the American dream. It used to be in this country that you could have a job and you could raise a family. You could even take a couple weeks vacation. You could have a car. You could have a house. Now, a lot of these jobs, you can't dream of owning a house. You can't raise kids on it. You don't know if you're going to have that job in 3 to 5 years. So the unemployment rate may look like 4%, but you're sitting there thinking, I'm not making $30, $35. I don't know if I've got upward mobility. I can't raise my family. And the solution to that is not just the government saying, okay, we're going to help you with child care and we're going to help you with health care. The solution to that is the government saying we're going to invest in the economic redevelopment of these communities. And I don't understand. It's a crime that our federal government sat there for decade after decade while these communities were hollowed out, saying go become software coders. And come on, I represent Silicon Valley. They're first of all, they did nothing to help these people learn jobs or get an opportunity in technology. And secondly, not everyone wants to go become a software coder. And it was neglect. I understand people's anger. I think the first step for the Democratic Party to try to build
is to own it.
Is to own it.
Absolutely. No, look, I've beat up on Bill Clinton for years because that whole idea, we don't need those dirty jobs. We're going to educate our way out of this. So I got to tell you, as a 57-year-old truck driver, I don't know what I'm going to be able to be retrained for the next 6-7 years.
Yeah, and I don't know why you should be retrained in terms of there's a dignity to all kinds of work. And this idea that we have in this country where we're pitting those who don't have a college degree against those who do have a college degree. Now we're overcorrecting. Oh, well, no one should go to college. Of course, no. This country needs people who have PhDs to have the modern factories. I love the fact that people want to go to college. But you know what I also love? I love the machinists. And I love the people who are plumbers and electricians and skilled trades and truck drivers. It's all of us together. It's like you're all playing a different position on a football field. We need the tight end. You need the wide receiver. You need the quarterback. And we need all of us. And what the vision for so many years was like, oh, somehow we don't need people who make stuff. And now we can't go and say, oh, we don't really need the higher education. The only way we're a superpower is if we have both.
No, you have to have a mix for every intellect, for every ability, for all that. And also recognize that there is dignity in no matter what you do.
Dignity.
That there is dignity in work, and that work should be respected. Sadly, we're not there yet. Do you think this ticket, the Harris-Walz ticket, moves us in that direction?
I do, because I think President Biden was moving us in that direction with the CHIPS Act, with the IRA Act. Those were new factory builds. And I think that both Vice President Harris and Governor Walz get it. They understand these communities. They understand that it's going to take government investment. They understand that it's going to take an investment in our workforce. I think the other thing we need is technical education in schools. You know, because I had wood shop in high school, I ended up developing a respect to say, you know, those are skills I don't have. Yeah, I may be good at writing an essay, but I can't fix anything around the house. And have some humility, you know, and now we don't have that exposure, and that's a real disservice that we're doing. And in fact, the skills with the dexterity with making things are probably the least likely to be automated by AI. So I would encourage even more people to go into some.
I was going to ask you about that as the last line of questioning, because you had mentioned AI and steel and all this, and I have people who are telling me next 15 years. We're going to lose about half of the jobs we're doing now. There's going to be a tsunami of job loss. There's a lot of fear and trepidation about the future. I don't think we're doing enough at your level or at state levels yet. Allay my fears.
Well, we've got to prepare people for the types of jobs they're going to be. If any politician stands there and says, we're going to have the steel plants back, modern steel plants, and it's going to employ 4,000 people with blast furnaces, they're lying. And the people have had enough of lies. But you know what? Wouldn't it be better to have a steel plant in Johnstown with 1,000 people, not 4,000, but at least you got 1,000 good-paying new jobs? And those jobs, yes, there is going to be some level of AI in the plant, but you're not going to need a ton of technology to be skilled in operating there. You're just going to need some basic ability to operate machines. And that's already happening in machinist classes and electrician classes. So we've got to build the modern factories. We've got to prepare people for those modern jobs. We credential them starting in school, giving them apprenticeships, give them those opportunities, and be honest with people that it is going to require some technology proficiency to compete in the modern world. That doesn't mean you got to go be a software engineer, but you do have to work in a modern factory.
No, I was just talking to a guy from Toledo. They're starting a high school specifically for EVs.
Yeah.
So you can go. He said, look, we're going to get kids coming out of high school getting six-figure jobs because they can fix EVs.
I think the American people are very smart and are capable of handling the truth. If you will go to them and you say, I'm going to bring back all the manufacturing that used to be, they'll laugh at you. They know that it's not happening. But if you say, look, here's what we can do, and here's what we need to do to prepare, and here's what we need to do to invest, they'll buy onto it. We haven't had a strong enough plan. We got to have that plan. I'm confident that Vice President Harris and Governor Waltz will have that kind of plan because of people like you, because they're listening to the communities like Johnstown.
No, it's a great time. And I got to tell you, I listen to all of this fear about what the future is going to bring. And look, I have some fear myself about what my kids are going to move into. We do need government that is going to be active, proactive in some places, but also a partnership to ensure that basic needs are helped and met.
Exactly. I don't know how old your kids are or what they're doing, but I think starting in high school, one of the biggest things we can do is from 9th to 12th grade, have people do some kind of apprenticeship or work if they want, and then do that post high school so that they get real world training and skills and a credential to do the work in the modern economy. We got to have multiple pathways for people in a modern economy.
No, absolutely. Ro, as always, I appreciate you taking time. Hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
You're always so thoughtful. I love coming on.
When we're back in the studio and a little less hectic.
Well, love the energy here. Let's go win this one.
Good stuff. Ro Khanna, thanks so much.
Thank you.
California Congressman Ro Khanna. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day that leading Southern textile employers met together in Greenville, North Carolina. They met to plan a coordinated response to the national textile strike. The Great Depression had ravaged the textile industry. Workers were subject to the, quote, stretch out. Fewer workers were expected to work at a faster pace to produce the same amount of products. Work in textile mills was already grueling. The stretch out made conditions even more unbearable. Fed up, 20,000 Southern workers walked off the job in July. From there, the numbers grew. On Labor Day, 65,000 workers in North Carolina joined the strike. Strikers confronted scabs and moved to close down mills not participating in the strike. They also disrupted railroad traffic. In response, the National Guard was called out against the strikers. Violence erupted between the strikers and armed police and strikebreakers throughout the South and New England. The Southern owners decided it was time to marshal their own response to the strike. According to historian Jeremy Brecker, an army of 10,000 National Guardsmen was mobilized in Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, and Mississippi, supplemented by 15,000 armed deputies. But despite this show of force, the strike grew. More than 400,000 textile workers had walked off the job. In response, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's administration declared that the working conditions and wages in the industry should be studied. Although there were no guarantees for improvement, union leaders called off the strike. Much to the anger of many rank-and-file union members, one of the largest worker actions in U.S. history and one of the most important uprisings of Southern labor was ended.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's all about rebuilding the country, bringing jobs back, the legacy of the Biden era. Quite frankly, moving away from neoliberalism, reshoring manufacturing, investing in the technologies of the future, rebuilding our infrastructure for our children and future generations. That is a legacy in one term. I think should get him on Mount Rushmore. But some of the stuff that we don't talk about, the CHIPS and Science Act, the jobs that are going to come out of that, the investment, the possibilities of the future, that to me, a big, to steal a Bidenism, a big freaking deal. And here to share some thoughts on that, the head of the Science Committee in the House, Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren. Zoe, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure. I wish that I was chairing the Science Committee, but I'm the senior Democrat.
Oh, okay.
Now, if all goes well, I will chair the Science Committee.
See, I knew that, but I screwed it up.
That's all right. What we didn't screw up was the Chips and Science Act.
No, that's the important part.
And we worked on that. Obviously, Biden was president, but the Democrats in the House, led by then by Nancy Pelosi, put together the Chips and Science Act, did a bunch of things. One, reshoring chip manufacturing, which chips are in everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
When the pandemic hit and the supply chains were disrupted, we couldn't build automobiles. We couldn't build refrigerators because we didn't have chips. So we need to bring that back to America. And Chips and Science is going to make that happen. But it's important that it's not manufacturing. It's also science. Because if you don't invest in science, 10 years from now, you got nothing. So it's chips and science to build the American economy.
No, which, I mean, you know, science is a huge thing, which is why I was so depressed when we did away with a lot of our NASA stuff.
Right.
You know, having a big, robust space program, to me, you know, as a kid growing up in the 70s,
right,
you know, how much came out of that,
a lot,
that space race, and how it moved us forward technologically, not just in going to space, but in every aspect of our lives.
That's right. We, you know, so many things we take for granted were offshoots from the space program.
And but that was government investment. That
exactly
was smart spending, smart investment, smart policy.
Well, you know, it's always a partnership. The space program now is partly private sector, but fundamentally also NASA. I mean, we don't have government planes, right? Private sector have planes. We don't need to have the government do that. Same with near space. We've got private sector companies doing near space, but deep space has got to be funded by the government, and the research has to be funded. So it's a great step and a great partnership that hasn't always existed. We need to do more funding for basic research that always used to have bipartisan support. The right-wingers and the MAGA crazies have kind of backed off that. But if we don't do that fundamental research, we're not going to have a future.
Yeah, no, look, we don't get to walk around with these things in our pockets that can talk to people face-to-face, which I got to be honest, as a kid growing up watching Lost in Space, mm-hmm, on TV, the fantasy was always, I'll be able to talk to somebody on the phone and see them.
Right.
And now you can do it with your phone while walking in the woods.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
We've got more computing power in my pocket than we had during the
NASA years.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. So the question is, how do we do that for our children to make sure that they have the technology that they need, but not in a way that infringes on their freedoms and their personal
exactly
liberties and all of that stuff?
Well, we need to make sure that people's personal privacy is the key to personal liberty, is protected. And we've fallen short of that with the MAGAs. But Anna Eshoo and I had a very important bill, the biggest privacy protection in tech of any bill ever introduced. And I hope that we'll have a chance to move that. But meanwhile, we need to do research,
right,
into some, like, quantum computing. We're now ahead of everyone else on that. It's not right on the doorstep, but it's like a couple steps past the
sure
door. And once we get that, a lot of things will open up. Fusion energy. People always say it was 50 years away. The private sector companies are now saying they expect to put fusion energy on the grid in the near 2030s. That would be, if they succeed,
that's a game changer.
Life-altering.
That's a game changer.
Yeah.
Now, let's go back to this Chips and Science bill, because, again, the funding for all that, really important to lay the groundwork for the future.
Correct.
But the now, we're kind of worried about the now. We want to make lives better now.
Exactly.
And you said that the chips, get us refrigerators and phones and, you know, toasters. And why we need chips and toasters, still don't know. But on a national security level,
correct,
something I think coming out of the pandemic, we learned how dependent we are on the rest of the world.
We were very vulnerable, very vulnerable. And that's why this is an important effort to bring this manufacturing capacity back to the United States. And the other thing that's important is that it needs to be distributed around the United States, not just on the coast, but it needs to be in the middle of the country. And so I'm sure you've seen some of the factories that are going into the Midwest that needs jobs.
My producer in Columbus, one of the big ones.
Exactly, and the training that needs to go with it. Because the prosperity needs to be shared across the United States. And so You know, that's a winner. That's a winner for the country.
Yeah, no, it's a winner. And not just we're going to solve national security problems, but we're going to get people jobs.
People jobs, but while they're working, they're also going to be solving supply chain problems. So, you know, they're good-paying jobs.
Yeah.
One of the things I've been working on is to make sure that we have adequate environmental protection in these communities. I come from Silicon Valley. There was a time when the toxics in chip manufacturing did tremendous damage. Now, most of that has been cleaned up to the credit of the advocacies and also the companies.
And regulations.
There are still some issues, and the head of OSHA has said that the OSHA standards are not sufficient. We need to use EPA standards for toxic exposure. So I've been working with NIST and the Department of Energy to make sure we have the highest standards so that workers are not injured while they're holding these good-paying jobs.
Yeah, that should be the minimum. Those should be union jobs.
Absolutely.
Without question. So last line of questioning I've got for you, because obviously there's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of conventions. You've been to a couple of them over your years.
Yep.
Where do you rate this one?
I'd say it's number one.
Really?
You know, the feeling here is, I mean, the Obama nomination was exciting in the sense of hope, but it didn't come from a place of despair. We were going to lose this election. I'm sorry to say it. I love Joe Biden and all he's done, but we're going to lose. And when he put country ahead of himself,
that
was
a it's amazing.
big turnaround, and now we have a chance to win, and everyone feels it.
You say a chance. I have talked to some people who think it's a slam dunk.
Oh, no, it's not a slam dunk. No, we have a chance to win, and we better get off our fannies and work like crazy to make sure we win.
So what's that message, that elevator pitch you give to people on why Harris Walz?
Well, I've known Harris for a long time. She is smart. She's dedicated. She's funny. But more than anything, she's normal. And I served with Tim Walz. He's a normal guy.
He's radically normal, as I put it.
The two of them, they just scream, normal, normal, normal. And I think the country needs a little normal after the weirdness that we've had in the past.
Yeah, we don't want to go back, do we?
No, we're not going back.
Zoloffgren, I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Take care.
Great stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. What do you think of the Walz-Harris ticket? Back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I got to tell you, Zoloffgren's people are going to wring my neck. Because at the beginning of the show, I said that she was on the Appropriations Committee. And I'm like, no, dummy. As soon as I said it, I knew I was wrong. And then in the interview, I have her as the chair. No, she's the ranking member of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. And again, I should know that. I guess it was hopeful. Let's go with that. I'm hoping that she will be the chair of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee if when the Democrats take power in January and win the House back in November. I guess that'll be my hope. That's where I'm going to bail myself out. Wow. And look, you know, here's the thing. And it didn't dawn on me until I listened to the interview. This is what happens when you're in that environment. People are, you know, we're just getting people shoved at us. Here, talk to this person. And, you know, sometimes you forget. So just being a little human. But hope you enjoyed today's program. I mean, ultimately, these folks are hopefully if they get the ability to move the agenda that we talked about here today, especially what Zoloffgren was talking about, you know, the idea of reshoring manufacturing, you know, investing heavily in science and technology and moving us forward. That's all really exciting, aspirational kind of stuff. The kind of stuff that I've said, maybe we should do more of. It'd be great to do really aspirational stuff where, hey, we can change the world. And we can leave this a place where, well, our children might actually want to inherit what we're leaving for them. Wouldn't that be something? They might actually be grateful. That would really, really be something. But I want to hear your thoughts. Anything the representatives, Pocan, Cesar, Khanna, or Lofgren had to say that made you think, made you angry, made you sad? Maybe they represent you. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the show, podcast, freespeech.org for the video. Check out that. Thanks to our friends at freespeech.org for all the help there. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.